Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013, is it?
I think
it was 2013. Yeah, it's going to be 5 years in May.
Holy mother.
Subtle. Subtle something or other right there. I don't know what I was going to say. But, Bill, stranger things have happened on this show. I am Johnny Num. Joining me tonight, as always, is...
I'm Billy Crash from forget it.
Bill, I think you're toothless from all those crashes.
Brain cellless.
I think we're both brain cellless tonight.
Oh man,
I'm actually a concert cellist, but you know, anyway.
Well, we're punchy from the winter, man. We're in Pennsylvania, and we're just getting pummeled like a glacier's moving into town.
I was going to say, Bill, how are things up in your neck of the woods?
Well, Johnny, when I look out the window, I could see there's some flurries coming, and there is a glacier. It's hiding behind a mountain. It's coming. It's coming, Johnny. Sorry. Whatever.
Quit trying to rip off Bill Hicks, Bill. Come on, jeez.
Oh, man. Oh, Bill Hicks killed, man. Love him.
Well, yeah, it's snowy outside. And Honey the Cat is missing, last I heard.
Oh, Stephen McCaddy, we love you, man.
Absolutely. And we are just going from tangent to tangent already. Tonight, pretty much. Actually, it's going to be a tangential conversation tonight on this show.
I think I'm going to curse a lot tonight.
Oh, really, Bill?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm excited. Oh, man, someone's cursing on a podcast. Let me get the popcorn. Yeah. Because tonight we are going to be doing, hey, now that the dust has settled on season two by a couple of months, Billy and I both watched Stranger Things, the first two seasons, and we decided, hey, let's do a show on it. We both have our opinions on the series up to this point. And, you know, I have a bunch of questions that I came up with because I'm genuinely curious, not just about certain aspects of the show, but just Stranger Things in terms of a phenomenon, which I would say it most certainly is. I think it's sort of broached the, you know, from being like just, it could have been a cult item, but I think it's, you know, you can buy Stranger Things merchandise and Funko Pops at like Hot Topic and FYE and anywhere else you can buy that stuff. So I think it's sort of transcended into the mainstream and at quite a rapid clip. Like as soon as that first season was released, you know, you heard the stories of people watching all 8 episodes in the course of a day and just going to Twitter to rave about it. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. Mm-hmm. Billy, do you want to distill the show down to a brief synopsis, or do you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead, man. You're on a roll.
In any case, it's about a bunch of kids living in the fictional town of Hawkins, Indiana. And it's set during, I believe, the early 80s. So, you know, the people who are around my age right now, I there was, just gauging the response on Twitter, there was a lot of response from people in their like mid to late 30s or maybe a little younger. But in any case, you know, these kids go to high school, they play Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. And... absolutely. Hey, all the cool kids do that.
Damn straight.
Or Shadowrun or something like that.
Keep talking.
But in any case, there's also this sinister military facility, a government research facility, also somewhere not too far away where strange things are occurring. A little girl with a shaved head escapes. It turns out she's a piece in an experiment that is going on, which involves the, I would say, people on our plane of existence trying to reach into another plane of existence, and there's a bit of a Lovecraftian imagery and notions that accompany that. And it involves a big bad coming through from the other side of the portal that our Scooby gang needs to join together and fight. And the second season sort of, you know, after the first season, things are kind of, certain things are kind of resolved, and the second season picks up with some new characters and, but some similar themes, and it kind of goes from there. So yeah, that's kind of the nutshell of the show without giving too much away. And I guess, Bill, maybe I could ask you just to start off.
Sure.
What are your feelings? Because you've watched both seasons.
Yep.
What are your feelings just overall about what you've seen so far? Do you think one season was stronger than the other, or just what do you think?
Well, my friend Dave and his lovely wife Jill, like, they're into it, and Jill kept saying, because I watched the first and second episode, and I'm like, whatever, third, whatever. And she's like, give it the fourth. The fourth is where it clicks in, and you're going to be in love with this. And I'm like, all right. So the fourth episode comes, and then the fifth, and then, you know, and it keeps going on. What was the question, man?
Well, Bill, so you're talking about the first season.
Yeah, the first season. I had major issues with the first season because, like, right from, like, the first – and I made sure it was cemented by the second episode. I'm like, okay, this is The Mist meets It meets Scooby-Doo, and it's X-Files Junior with kids. And we've seen all of this before, and what's the big deal? And that really bugged me the most. And what really I loathe, hate, and despise about the entire show, first and second season, although I did like the second season more, is the fact that it's loaded with what I call Flintstone plots. Meaning, and it's the same as the Honeymooners, you know.
Wilma!
Yes, exactly. Wilma knows information to A. Fred knows information to B. They both think the other person doesn't know what's going on, and if they would just take a second to fucking communicate, they could move forward. And that's one of the things that bugged me. People in the show would have information that they wouldn't share with other people who were gaining other information, and that bothered me. And from a writing perspective, and you're one hell of a writer, and you love literature, so I know this has to be hopefully a point that, you know, irritates you as well, is no matter what happens in this show, we are always ahead of the characters. And that is bad. That's bad writing, bad structure, bad storytelling. It pisses me off to no end. And that's where I'm at, man. I don't get the love for this fucking show. I really don't. Okay. I'm watching it because of this podcast. Whoever thought of this podcast up? Like, what an asshole. Bunch of bums.
I think Dave K is going to have a ball listening to this, actually.
I hope so. I hope he does.
Because
Fiend on film, baby.
Yeah, he usually likes to rag on us for even tempting to express our like for something mainstream. So, anyway.
Well, Palka was saying, so he said, you got to give me a scream out. He called me right before we were recording, and he's like, once I mentioned Stranger Things, he started laughing because he knew where I was going to be going with this probably. So,
well, Bill, you know, I will say I agree with your sentiment. Just in general, when it comes to movies or TV or whatever, where the viewer is ahead of the characters, that's bad, because it's like you said, you got to wait for the characters to catch up to something you already know, and you wind up retreading the ground you've already seen.
Yeah, it's awful.
And for whatever reason,
here we go.
Well, I'll
save it, Johnny. Save the show.
I'll save the show briefly here because I didn't. I could see that going on in the first season, but I felt that the show was paced in such a way and the characters were written in such a way that I didn't mind it as much as I minded it in the second season. I was kind of like, I was wrapped up in the show pretty much from the start.
Why? Tell me, Johnny, I got to know why. Why?
Well, you know what, Bill, I've said it on this show before, and I will probably say it many more times before we die or stop recording, whichever comes first.
It depends on the glacier moving in.
I was going to say, yeah, I might wind up eating my arm, but I'll be letting my cats eat my arm, basically.
Oh, they're going to gnaw out your brain while you're sleeping, man. You're done.
Pretty much. They're just going to stick their head inside my ear and start biting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Bill, I said this before, and I'm like, I am a real sucker for coming-of-age stories. I make no bones about it. And one of the big things, and we can get into this a little bit, is Stranger Things, I feel like, actually, first and foremost, I feel it's like a coming-of-age story where the kids are thrust into these like exceptional circumstances. And you know, I liked how the kids were written. I liked their interactions between the boys, Lucas, mm-hmm. Dustin, aka Toothless, and Mike, and to a lesser extent, Will Byers. But Will Byers is kind of the he's kind of the monster's bitch in both seasons of the show, so he doesn't really get a lot of presence. But I really like their interplay. It's kind of,
but we've seen that all before too.
No, I thought they did a good. No, I felt they did a good job with it. I'm willing to acknowledge that Stranger Things unabashedly and flagrantly pulls from so many sources of other things, and that's another thing we can talk about. But
their theme is X-Files induced.
Well, in the first season, I was on board. I was in with the story. I was in with the characters, and it held my interest pretty much up to the end. I love the character of Eleven, even though she's Carrie Firestarter. But you know, Carrie Firestarter meets William Hurt in Altered States, I guess.
Wow, that's great, man! I like that. What a mashup.
Well, I'm talking about the impromptu submersion chamber they create for her, kind of. She doesn't turn
upside
into an
down,
ape. She doesn't turn into an ape at any point, though.
Not yet.
get the ghost of Ken Russell on the line. Stranger Things season 3. Yeah.
Yeah, just directed by him, his ghost. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Drop acid like you did for Lair of the White Worm and just go to town, man.
Bill, as an aside, have you seen his movie Gothic?
It's on my list, man.
I watched it recently. It's really good. I think you'll like it if you like Lair of the White Worm.
I'm there.
It's Lair of the White Worm and The Lords of Salem. That's like the perfect triple feature right there. And Hossu, you can throw in Hossu as well.
That's true. And now back to our regular scheduled program.
So the bottom line is I like season 1 of Stranger Things for the reasons stated.
I'm sorry to cut you off, man. Do you think you're living vicariously through these characters like you wish growing up that you had this opportunity to be on an adventure and win as a fucking kid?
Good valid question. I mean, while I was watching it, I wasn't thinking that, but perhaps like me watching something like Stranger Things or Super Dark Times or even The Breakfast Club, you know, part of me is maybe envious of the adventure or the connections the characters were making, you know, and I can acknowledge on one level that there's a level of, it's a tricky line to toe, I think, because you watch something by John Hughes, really, and there's a lot of bullshit in his films. It's a lot of
right.
There's a lot of inauthenticity to go along with the authenticity, and that's not something you really see until you get to be like in your late 20s or early 30s or something like that, and get a bit of wisdom about the world.
Right.
But I mean, I won't. Maybe on a subconscious level, that's something that's appealing about this show. Like maybe I envied the. I really loved the relationship, especially between Mike and Eleven in the first season. You know, that's sort of like a awkward puppy love kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, I like Mike and Eleven were my favorite characters on the show. But yeah, maybe that's part of it. Maybe I'm just maybe I had a pathetic loser of a childhood and I'm just kind of,
no, you didn't. You're okay, Johnny. It's all good now.
I'm going to hug you, Bill, like I'm in Fight Club now. So yeah. well, okay. So you bring up that point, Bill, like, I take it you, a bone of contention with you is that, did you feel anything for the characters? Or did the
only one this, initially?
Okay, well, who was it?
The only character that I liked was David Harbour's Jim Hopper. I mean, you know, he was awesome. You know, I liked. He had some complexity to him. You know, I've been a Winona Ryder fan since birth. Anyway. You know, she plays Joyce Byers. She's now getting up to $300,000 an episode. She just got like a $200,000 raise per episode. And, you know, there's these commercials about everybody loves a comeback because, like, she's found her thing. But, like, her character was just, like, you know, the whacked out screaming mom for, like, the whole friggin' season. I was like, somebody just punch her in the face, you know, knock her out. I also loved her kid, though. Not Will, but... what the hell's his name?
Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan, you know, played by Charlie Heaton. He was great. He looks like, when I saw him, I'm like, is he supposed to be like, you know, Norman Reedus Jr.? Like, is this why they picked this guy? You know, with the hair, man, you know, and all that stuff. And Norman's cool, so, but.
Well, he's got that monotone too as well, yeah.
Yeah, and actually the one, two characters that I've started to really enjoy since then are Natalia Dyer's Nancy Wheeler, because she's gone through some major changes. And what was her old boyfriend? What was his name? Steve? Was that Steve Harrington?
Yeah, Steve. Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Keery. I mean, his character went from like being like, you know, douche to like friggin' he's awesome. You know, I think that's great. But but I've seen the others before too often. I've seen the Scooby Gang thing done a billion times, coming of age. Oh, wait, they're getting bullied in school. No. You know, it's like, come on. And the biggest thing that bothers me, Millie Bobby Brown's awesome. But,
yeah.
Okay, so you're Matt Modine, the great Matt Modine, playing this evil scientist guy who's like using her for, you know, experiments and all this shit. So if you're a scientist and you know, that, okay, this is all about the science. I don't care that she's a kid. But you know that to get the best out of that kid is to treat her like a kid. So wouldn't you have her in a room wearing cool clothes, having cool stuff, so she could feel like this really is home and that you really are her papa, which is fucking creepy and weird. And wouldn't you give her a name instead of Eleven? Like, wouldn't you have her, like, well, you're 11 because we didn't have a name for you yet, and you're 6, and what name do you want? I want to be Esmeralda. Great, you're Esmeralda, you know what I mean? So, I'm like, come on, I can't buy into that, you know? It's like, it was just pissing me off. I wanted Scully and Mulder to come in and just, like, blow the place up or some shit.
I was waiting for the moment, Bill, where Millie Bobby Brown is saying, who am I? And Matthew Modine says, you are number 11. And Millie Bobby Brown says, who is number one? Matthew Modine says, you are number 11.
I am not a number. I'm a free girl.
Diabolical laughter there.
Oh, my own.
You know, Bill, those, yeah, definitely valid points there. And I have a feeling some of that was... This will lead into the other thing very well, I think. Stranger Things, you've mentioned X-Files, you've mentioned a bunch of other things. Stranger Things is huge on the pastiche.
Yeah.
Now, do you feel that part of the show's success is borrowing so heavily from things that are very familiar, especially to genre fans, or even people who just grew up watching the Goonies or whatever, you know, who have a soft spot for that type of ragtag bunch of kids who are kind of outsiders? Like, do you feel that that's a part of the show's success? What do you think makes the show successful?
Well, I think it is that, but aren't people sick of the same old shit? Don't you want a new vibrant story? Can't you have this pastiche, which I no longer put on my bread when I have a sandwich? But anyway, that's another story. Why can't you have this little homage shit and these little tributes and all the other crap and nods and whatnot? And it's hard not to, because what's new anyway? But can't you do something to make it different, unique, robust, and bring us in? We were just talking about it. It's going to be a future show about Twin Peaks that we're going to do here. And David Lynch took a soap opera and he put it on its fucking head and he stomped on it, squished it, gave it life again. And it's like, what the hell am I watching? And I couldn't take my eyes off of that screen. Back in the 90s, man, when this thing was playing, people would have Twin Peaks parties.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of that, and I was never so sucked into a show before. And it just blew the lid off of television of what it could be when you take something that's overtread, mundane, ludicrous, and you say, fuck it, let's rock it, and you do that. This show, no. The Duffer Brothers, congratulations to them. I'm glad they got this gig. I don't know how they pitched it. Hey, you saw it all before, but let's do it again. Oh, yeah, we'll buy that. I don't know what they did. But it just pisses me off that I'm not in – there's no mystery. It's like, okay, I know everything that's going on. I got to wait for all of these characters to catch up over a series of 5, 6, 7 episodes. They're not talking to each other. Who gets new information and is keeping it to themselves, even from their friends, where we're always honest with each other and all this crap. And it's just the same shit over and over again with every character. You know, it did have its moments in season 2, though, that I did like, where I actually finally saw stuff that I didn't predict.
Okay.
So I would be watching scenes, and it's like, okay, this woman's coming into the restaurant. I know who she is. I know what's going to happen. And it wasn't even like, ooh, you know, wow, Billy Crash, man. Like, you know this stuff. It's amazing. No, it's basic plot writing 101 that you're not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You could see everything coming. Fuck. Pisses me off. And it's like, you know, and they do this cool shit like, oh my God, you know, Will, he's channeling. He could see this shit that's, you know, the fucking upside down, and he's going to draw it out on paper. We got to put it together like a puzzle. Did he have to draw such massive shit so it has to go all over the house? And then people go, oh, wait, well, if you look at that elbow turn there, that's probably the creek near it. And it's like, come on.
Actually, I wasn't following that at all. That's the second season. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, come on, man. You know, and it just got so tiresome. And you have these kids who are brilliant and talented and can figure shit out. You kids stay here. We're going to go and do this, whatever. So are they going to stay there? Of course not. Or you would have a show. Yeah, the kids were good. The kids were good. They stayed in the gym. They listened to mommy and the cop. Come on. I'm like, ah. Dude, if I had hair on my head, I'd be ripping it out.
Well, okay, Bill.
I'm winded, Johnny.
Let me talk for have Burgess Meredith give you some water, Mick. Okay, come on.
I ain't no bum.
Yeah.
You know, well, wait. No, I swear to God. This morning, my breakfast, I had raw eggs. I drank raw eggs. I swear to God.
Were you? I thought you were doing the Cool Hand Luke thing, Bill, where you're like eating what 60 in a minute 50. Or something like. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, with George Kennedy, man.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
Bill, you know what's funny is the show is turning into a pastiche show where we're like referencing everything under the sun, not unlike Stranger Things. That's interesting.
You and your hipster fucking words, man.
Sorry, man. I wanted to go back to what you were saying about Twin Peaks, though.
Go ahead.
Just something that popped into my head. And it's a matter of, sensibility now and technology now, as opposed to technology and, I guess, the sensibility of 1990 and 91 right. or whatever. You know, I was rewatching Twin Peaks recently, and I told you, I'm not going to go into spoiler territory with my reaction to it, but just, you know, I imagine what it must have been like, because that was a different time. There was less you could get away with on just, you know, I know Stranger Things is Netflix, but just on network television, there was less you could get away with, but people's sensibilities were attuned to a certain, you know, to a certain sensibility. So certain things in Twin Peaks probably came off as extremely shocking.
We changed television.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's some, I definitely think there's some watershed moments on that show.
Absolutely.
That kind of, you know, blow your mind. And, but, you know, just, that was a show that people would sit in front of their TV because you had, there was must see TV because you weren't watching it on video. You weren't watching it streaming because the internet, like as far as a widespread domestic thing was right. still a pipe dream. And, you know, it wasn't the era of instantaneous availability for things. People who wanted to watch it had to either set their VCRs to tape it or actually sit down and watch it or both. And so it became this more phenomenon because it like centered around the Monday morning water cooler talk as well. It developed buzz, I think. Oh, did you see that show? Did you see what happened last night on last night's episode? And, you know, you work your way up to where we are now with Netflix monopolizing the whole streaming thing and with their, you know, television shows. It's like, oh, well, you know, you don't have to wait to watch 12 episodes of Twin Peaks. You know, boom, we're going to drop all 8 episodes of Stranger Things or Orange is the New Black or whatever Netflix show is popular right now. And you can pretty much turn yourself into a turnip over the course of a weekend watching all the episodes.
True.
And I'm wondering if that's sort of if Stranger Things is sort of a reflection of more of like the internet age, more the social media age, where, you know, you have a thought on any single thing, boom, you can put it on Facebook, you can put it on Twitter, and people will react to it. And, you know, maybe there's something twofold about Stranger Things, and that there's the instant gratification of being able to watch all of it in a sitting if you want to. But there's also that gratification of, oh, well, it's checking off all these boxes of what I want in something. It's this kind of fan service, wish fulfillment kind of thing.
Then tell me a better story.
Yeah, I mean,
still,
I'm not.
You know?
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you, Bill, and I'm just wondering if like we were born too late or something like that, or too early.
No, you know, all the people I know digging this show are well, I mean, I don't even know because I'm not teaching anymore. But I don't know if I know I did know some students who like watched, but they really didn't care. And it seems like it's more for the people I know who were begging me to watch it were older.
Well, and I wonder if there's a sense of I'm just spitballing here, just like this sense of maybe. You were asking me if I related to the, you know, if I was living vicariously through the kids and their adventures and on the show. And, you know, now I'm starting to wonder if it's like the people who are really responding to this, like the fan base, you know, especially people maybe my age or, you know, your age, is like, well, it's like I th- this is the childhood I wanted but never had, and it's like that this this distortion, because it's like, oh well, what was I doing in my childhood? I was watching movies because I was so lonely, so I related to the Goonies like it was my own childhood,
right?
As opposed to a fictional movie or something like that.
Yeah, I know, and I mean that. God, that exists all the time for us. I mean, we have so many films like this, and you know, we're actually going to have a Scooby Gang show too coming up. You know, where we talk about this type of crap, and
it's not always crap.
No, it isn't always crap. But the thing is, it's like you could have a coming of age story, you could have a Scooby Gang show, and all that stuff, but do something different with it.
Mm-hmm.
Give us something unique. Be a new voice. Don't give us the same shit. Like, you know, I'm sorry, man. You know, I'm happy this happened. I'm happy everybody's working. It does have moments that I like. I don't completely hate this thing. And, you know, I'm really happy for the Duffer Brothers for getting stuff going and whatnot. But, like, write better.
Yeah.
Write better shit, man. Give me a story that isn't dragged out that, you know, somebody else could tell in, like, a couple of episodes. I'm sick of all this drawn-out shit.
Well, Bill, and I also think, you know, not to interrupt, but I feel like your point about stuff being drawn out is very much indicative of the time we're living in right now.
That sucks.
Well, no, I'm just not to sound like the old fart, you know, the old man screaming at the cloud sort of thing, but
I know your father. Get off my lawn. Sorry, go ahead, man.
Yeah. But it's kind of like what I was saying about the instant gratification of Netflix. It's like, oh, well, I feel like we're very spoiled and we've come to a point where it's like we don't acknowledge that we are. So it's like we just demand more, but we don't. We just demand more in terms of quantity, not necessarily in terms of quality. We demand more, but not better, perhaps. I'm just saying in general as a population.
And I agree. I mean, like, I still, you know, like I'm watching The Walking Dead and,
good for you.
Yeah. and like, I missed it last night. My housemate's like, Bill, do you you want to see The Walking Dead? Just fill me in. Cause I know nothing happened that, you know, I'm probably not going to miss because they're dragging this frigging thing out ad nauseum. But there is one show, and Susan on the Ledge would agree with me. Ash versus Evil Dead, it's a half hour. It's insane. The writing is off the wall. The dialogue is amazing. You have gore and laughs and gore and laughs. It's insane. Groovy Bruce is killing it. The great Bruce Campbell, Dana DiLorenzo and company, Lucy Flawless, as she calls her. Lucy Lawless and company. And it is a nonstop blast. It's, to me, it's the best horror show on television, period, bar none. And it is just full of vibrant, awesome, I have no idea what's going to happen next writing. Mm-hmm. When I watch Stranger Things, it could be called Bored Things. And it could be, you know, and I'm just sitting there waiting. Oh, I hope by the next episode, Will will tell his mom X so they could figure out Y so they could all get to Z because this is going on too long. Mm-hmm. And it's so drawn out. And there, we're talking about an interdimensional weird thing going on. We're talking about bizarro creatures. I'm thinking if this was written by another team, like the old team from the X-Files, Morgan and company, you know, you know, this thing could explode and be bonkers. And really be cool and engaging and riveting and have you on the edge of your seat and have you freaking out every episode. And here I'm trying to stay awake. I'm trying to stay awake with The Walking Friggin' Dead. You know, when I watch Ash versus Evil Dead, dude, I'm like, I don't even need to go to bed that night. I got enough energy to last me for days. That's what I want. I want that writing. Yeah, no. I want great writing.
Yeah, you know what, Bill? And I was actually going to bring up Ash versus Evil Dead.
Well, you can now.
Well, I mean, you already brought it up, so I don't even know why I'm saying that. But just as like a counterpoint, because, you know, that's a show that is obviously it came about because, you know, people of the cult following that the Evil Dead films developed over the years, like, and people wanted Bruce Campbell back. They didn't want the remake. They wanted Bruce Campbell back as Ash.
His remake and, sucked.
Yeah. And, you know, and I totally agree. I started watching that show, Bill, and it does, like you said, you know, some, it may seem on the surface like it's just a goofy gore fest, which it is, but the writing, like you said, is so unpredictable. The characters are very cool and very well developed, and the creatures that they come up with, the designs... are actually really dynamic, and some of the stuff in the first season I remember creeping me out, like kind of like when it's like one of the early episodes. Yeah, one of the early episodes, they run afoul of some demon, and I was like, oh my god, this thing is actually freaking me out here. So I was like,
no, and I'm
but, really, but the, oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, man. You go.
No, but the show is, it's freaking hilarious. It stays true to, you know, Ash, the character of Ash, while adding these new characters seamlessly into the, you know, the story and the mythos. And
be my vagina, Johnny.
Except, well, I already am, Bill, so you know. I'm proud to be your vagina.
Dude, I almost spit water into the electrical socket.
That's not water, Bill. Head.
Oh my god!
But no, yes, yeah, so that's like, you know, and I would say that, yeah, like I said, Ash versus Evil Dead kind of came about as a result of like the people's desire to see more of the Ash saga of, you know, and so obviously fan service to some extent brought that character back to life. And, you know, for very, you know, in a very good way for horror fans. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the show goes on its own path. It starts telling a new story. It's not rehashing the beats of the previous films.
Yeah. No, of course not. No, they're breaking new ground. They're having a good time. It's a blast. And that's one of the things with the, you know, the characters in this show. Like, this is one thing I knew right from the beginning. They mm-hmm. only had like one character had a miss, you know, had, you know, didn't make it. But I know, unless they're like, you know, unless a kid's like, well, I want to go and I want to move to Kentucky and I don't want to do the show anymore. They're not killing off any of these friggin' kids.
No.
And that's what's, so I know no one's in danger.
Well, and I think that is a problem, Bill. I do agree with that because it's kind of transparent because of how certain characters are depicted and based on guest starring status.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
The big guests,
they're the red shirts.
Yeah, exactly. They're only probably signing on for one season unless they're meeting their per diem for the for another season. So,
poor Sean Astin.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I agree with you with that, Bill. It's kind of like you get these characters who are either so virtuous or so villainous that you kind of, it's kind of like, yeah, you know how it's going to wind up for them. So yeah. It's a question of how dignified their death is in the show.
Well,
but
it's not even just that. Like, you know, recently it was funny because I was talking to my housemate, you know, we saw the big episode with The Walking Dead where Carl doesn't make it. And it's like, whatever. She was like knitting. I was like looking at something on the TV. They were dragging that episode out.
Sure.
And you know what? Nothing against the actor or anything like that. But, you know, I really didn't give a shit about his character. And it really didn't do much for me. And I wasn't emotionally invested because of the way that they presented certain things about the character. And in that end episode where he becomes like this kid who isn't dying like a kid, and maybe, you know, maybe he wouldn't be dying like a kid because of all the shit he's seen, but, mm-hmm. you know, he becomes a sage on his deathbed. You know, it's like, oh, dad, please. You know, it's like, oh my God. You know, I just couldn't take it. And whenever somebody magically gets their head blown off in The Walking Dead, I'm never surprised. Or it's like, you know, that's going to happen, which is cool, but you know that certain characters are definitely safe. And it's not mm-hmm. just from reading the comic, but if, like, can you imagine if, like, you know, Norman Reedus's character just didn't happen to make it?
Yeah.
Forget it. The show would be off the air in a week because, like, 8 billion people would just stop watching it because they're watching it because of him, you know?
Well, it's that if Daryl dies, we riot hashtag. Oh, yeah, campaign, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and you knew that wasn't going to happen. But, like, with this show, like, all these kids are fucking safe. They're all safe.
The kids are way too valuable, like you said, Bill. Yeah.
There's no danger, so why should I be invested?
Well, and I think they're, it's like, in some ways, it's weird because you have, like, David Harbour, who I agree is fantastic. He's awesome. I love his character. I just love him as an actor, too. Yeah, nothing against Ron Perlman, who I think is great, but I'm actually looking forward to David Harbour as Hellboy, so.
Oh, yeah.
But, and I, you know what, Bill, I actually really liked Winona Ryder in this show.
I did, but her character was one note for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I liked about it is it found a practical use for her, a sort of neurotic demeanor, actually. It's sort of like her bug-eyed, slack-jawed kind of like, oh my God, stuff is happening and I have no idea what it is sort of thing. I like that about her.
Yeah, but they rode that pony for too long. Now she's like getting a little tough and all that stuff, and she's trying to starting to wind down a little bit and become more grounded. But it like took forever, and just like was sucking a life out of me, man.
You know, Bill, honestly, I thought they dragged it well into the second season, but maybe I'm not remembering it.
No, they did. It's only now near the end of season two where it's like, okay, maybe she's going to be a little bit more stable and a little bit more confident in herself as a woman and a single mother, more confidence in her kids. And maybe her kids will even be more loving of their mother because they know that she's tough. Like, but like now take this to another level, man. Now the Duffer brothers have to fucking do something to make season three kill, which is only coming out in 2019 now, which to me is a big damn mistake.
Well, I'm just speaking generally here. I'm thinking the audience is gonna wait it out because
no, they are. But come on, man.
Well, going back to Winona Ryder's character something that annoyed you about her in that first and part of the second season was the fact that she wasn't very she didn't seem to have a lot of agency, or she just didn't stand up like she should have as a mother would have. Okay.
Well, no, it was fine to be the nervous, freaked out mother, to be worried about your child and all, but that never just like ended. It's like she became one note, and it was just, it irked me, you know, like one of the great movies that we saw in 2017, and I hope people did. From a writing perspective, it knocked me out. Not because it was outrageous and crazy, but because for the first time in a long time, in fact, for the first time maybe ever, I saw more than one complex character on screen with situations that could not be resolved, and that was Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. And those characters had such depth, such complexity, it made it where you didn't know what was going to happen next because you didn't know how they were going to react. Is their emotional side going to come out? Is their logical side going to come out? These characters, the kids are emotional, the parents are emotional here and there. Some maybe aren't, but they're like sticking on their own little planes. And it's just, that's why I'm liking the Nancy Wheeler character now. One of my favorite scenes of the whole season was when she's with Jonathan Byers, and you know he's trying to like shoot a tin can and he can't, and she can, and what does he do? He gives her the gun, and a scene's coming up where she might have to use it, and she just like flipping a wrist, puts the wheel in there, you know, getting the revolver ready, and I'm like, man, she's changing real quick, and this is cool, and that's awesome. And we got to see changes in her old boyfriend, and that was cool. But like, a lot of the characters are just like rant, you know, to me. They're just, and it's annoying.
Well, Bill, you know what? And like I said, I liked the first season of this show. The second season, which of course everybody was going on about in a similar fashion as the first, because everybody just consumed it over the course of a weekend. You know, I'm like, maybe I always try to keep my expectations just kind of neutral, if at all possible.
Right.
But, you know, everything is about the hype machine these days. And, you know, Netflix doesn't even have to do hype. I mean, they have Twitter does the hype. Twitter does the hype for Netflix when it comes to this show. You know, it's like, oh, did you see that? Oh, my God. Oh, let's dissect every single episode because we watched it in 8 straight hours. But I can't relate to that at all. I maybe it's because of growing up, you know, it's like, I was used to having to wait a, you know, wait a week between episodes of The Simpsons for Pete's sake. So, you know, but yeah, something that put me on the outs with season 2 of Stranger Things is it felt like the writing was kind of scraping. I found myself caring a lot less about these characters that I actually gave a crap about in the first season. I didn't care about Dustin's friendship with this alien specimen, basically, that winds up wreaking all sorts of havoc. Right. His character actually really got on my nerves.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he did to me too. Dustin Carr was like, okay, if they're going to take anybody out this season and it's a kid, let it be him.
Yeah, and the minus a couple points for the cat death in that season too.
yeah.
But, you know, and I was kind of interested in the Maxine character who's introduced in the first episode, the red-haired skateboarding badass chick, Sadie Sink, I believe.
Yes.
I thought she was cool.
Her, you know, brother, but, man.
Well, that yeah. What, you know what, Bill? I think he went on to remove asbestos from the Danvers State mental institution. Bullethead.
Oh my god, that's funny, man.
But it's like, I liked her character, but it's like, oh, she's stuck in this like cliched relationship dynamic with this delinquent, you know, potential sibling of hers that she's kind of stuck with, kind of for certain things. I didn't care about the relationship between her and Lucas, Caleb McLaughlin's character.
But I like Caleb McLaughlin, man. I like him, and I liked how his character was getting more face time. And
that's true. He was, yeah,
yeah. And I like him. He's a little badass, and it's like, you know, shit's going on. You know, he wants to be there. You know, puts the bandana around his head. He's like a little Rambo. And like, if of all the kids, if I had like, you know, if I didn't have 11 and her, you know, psychic abilities, like freaking man, dude, give me freaking Lucas, man.
You know what? I definitely agree with you, Bill. I felt like he was kind of maybe reduced to second banana or third banana status on the first season. But yeah, they really let him kind of come into his own. And part of it is this, you know, the weird relationship, and I guess that's something that I could say is kind of an accurate reflection of adolescence, is, you know, he kind of likes Max, but Max is like she has that tough exterior and she doesn't want to let anybody in, kind of.
Not anymore. She's part of the Scooby gang now. They're all good. Of course, they're going to have, like, someone's going to keep a secret next season, and it's going to, like, you know, we're going to have to wait 4 episodes until they all get the answer, and they're going to be upset with each other. Like, ah!
Well, Bill, look, okay, let me ask you a question here.
Oh, here we
Yes, here we go. Since you said the second season started to like it at a certain point. Maybe tolerate it. I don't know.
Like at what
point did it go from being, it's just dragging on? Like, when's it going to start to pick up? When did it start to pick up a little bit for you without, you know, like what was happening that kind of?
Well, a couple of things that I liked that they did that was unexpected and was away from the normal tropes with, and I hate, you know, government conspiracy crap. I mean, you got like, you know, I mean, like a congressman can't even work with another congressman to pick out a toilet seat. So I don't believe in government conspiracies because they're not intelligent enough to do shit like that.
It was a big league toilet seat, Bill.
But what I loved was the introduction of the fantastic Paul Reiser character. And hey, man, hey, what happened in the past is past. That guy's gone. You know, and we have new checks and balances in place. And it was great at one point when, like, the whole place got ripped to shreds. And then you have, And, like, people started to know about what was going on. So it wasn't like, oh, we got to keep this secret and, like, kill the town or some bullshit. And, like, that was okay. That I liked. That was a little bit better for me. I did hate the end, though, because I knew what was going to happen. And, you know, again, and like, oh, yeah. Okay, she's got psychic abilities. Yeah. How about we have her? I don't know. What could we do? What could we? Yeah, her nose will bleed. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, we only saw it a billion times. And, you know, she's putting her hand down. She's going to bring down the Big Bad, and everything's gonna close up. That her their version of the Hellmouth from the Buffyverse, and you knew, like, oh yeah, it's really gone. You know, like, come on. And I'm just so I th threw up a little bit in my mouth, like I did, and
Well, you know something, Bill, something that it's interesting because I watched it with my girlfriend, who you know.
quite well, and she's a lovely, lovely person.
Yes, she is. And you know, it was interesting because she was actually she was hooking into the second season in a way that I was not, and I don't really know why that was, but I know.
Communicate.
Well, no, I know, but
Don't be
we
Fred
were like,
Flintstone, man. Don't be Fred Flintstone.
just don't get that huge rack of Brontosaurus ribs that tips your car over at the end of
Oh
the
my God,
night.
I could go for a rack of those right now. Go ahead, man.
But you know, we did talk about it, and I would kind of like say, like, yeah, it's at one point, maybe at the halfway point, I was like, yeah, this is it's really not doing it for me. I think it was the stuff that you were talking about that bothered you at the first season, Bill. Maybe the chickens were coming home to roost. Maybe it was some of the hype that I was honestly really sick of, in the community, kind of. It's just like I don't know. I mean, people like things for whatever reason they want to like things, and I'm not gonna take that away from them. And maybe it's my fault for maybe thinking, hey, I really like the first season.
Right.
Maybe I had some on a subconscious level, my expectations were calibrated higher than I thought, and I wound up disappointed as a result. But
And believe me, man, I'm just saying, I want to love this show, but they're not letting me. And
Well,
I'll tell you my, I'm sorry, I just, because I just thought of something. My fear for season three is that they'll turn, and he's killing his role too, and I love it. Randy Havens, who plays Mr. Clark, if they turn him into a Giles character, I'm just gonna throw up everywhere. And I'll die from dehydration on the spot. Yeah, Bill just threw up till everything just stopped, man.
he
Sorry.
just had combination diarrhea puke. That would really dry you out.
Ew.
Sorry. That's actually something I don't even want to imagine. Okay. Well, yeah, you know what, Bill? That's valid, and he keeps popping up in the story too, kind of as a
Yep.
so. But yeah, I it was it just the story wasn't hooking me because it felt like they were rehashing, and the plot line that I liked the most, and granted, it's my sentimental nostalgic side and
Oh
memories of
boy.
unrequited love from high school, but the whole thing with Mike pining away for Eleven, who's been isolated. I was like, I was all about that storyline, but I guess I get it because that took up so much space in the first season that I guess they wanted to give the other characters some airtime to get their stories told. So I was kind of like, oh, I want to go. I just kept wanting to go back to the Mike and Eleven saga, and I didn't care about the blossoming romance between Jonathan and Nancy, even though I liked their characters. I didn't care.
We could
I
see
didn't.
we saw that coming from like the second episode of the first season.
Yeah, and something that really irritated me, Bill, and I don't know why it bothered me so much. Maybe it was because it was the last episode and I was so underwhelmed by, the season pretty much overall. I didn't even care about Steve becoming the cool babysitter father figure. People were going on about that, but I was like, okay, I get it, but I just didn't care about it. I was so annoyed by Dustin's character that season that I It totally detracted from that subplot.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I'm gonna tell you this is the thing that's really bugging me about what's coming for season three. And if the Duffer brothers, want to do something different, then don't make Joyce Byers and Jim Hopper fall in love. Because if that happens, it's gonna be like, and I saw that because I saw this coming like episode two or three of season one. It's like, here we go. It's going to take them forever, but they're going to get there. And like, I don't want to see that. I don't know. What do you want?
Bill, you know what? Seriously, Bill.
Tell me.
When that little when that came out, like explicitly at the beginning of the second season, I had the same misgivings about it. Honestly, I was like, oh no, not just no. You know,
Yeah,
that's.
exactly. This is it's so overdone and expected. One of the great things about the X-Files, the original series, was, and Chris Carter had this in the Bible, the show style guide, no matter what happens, Mulder and Scully can never kiss. They can never get that close. And it would just keep, the viewers chomping at the bit for them to come together, and he was going to deny us. And I was like, good for you, man. I was like, that's awesome. And so I guess my question to you, what do
Well,
you,
Bill,
oh yeah.
can I finish? Can I finish? Because
Oh, I'm
I got
sorry, man.
derailed.
I
I
got
got derailed.
I derailed you.
No, you didn't, because I was derailing myself. But the whole you watched Freaks and Geeks, Bill. You love that show, right?
Show was frightening because it was my life, man. In high school.
Yeah, exactly. And Freaks and Geeks was kind of like I found myself thinking of that show in relation to Stranger Things.
Yes.
The end of the first episode of Freaks and Geeks is so great to me. It's where Lindsay Weir, played by the great Linda Cardellini,
Oh yeah.
she goes to like the school dance, but she's by herself. And there's this kid who's mentally retarded, played by Ben Foster before he became Ben Foster, basically. And you know what? She's you know the it's this weird parallelism going on because her little brother's going to the dance too, and he's nervous because he's with this girl who he really likes, but he doesn't quite know how to express it to.
Right.
And then that what is it? This is it a Styx song or a Journey song or something? It's the Come Sail Away song. But it's okay. All right.
I know.
But
Go ahead.
within the context of that scene, it's beautiful. Like they just start dancing and it's just kind of, just kind of free form. It's like, hey, it's all awkward. We're adolescents. It's like, let's just do whatever feels good at that moment. What annoyed me about the end of Stranger Things season two was it essentially replicates that
Yeah,
whole.
it does, yeah.
Sorry, people, but it replicates that whole sequence, including a nod to John Hughes' Pretty in Pink, basically. And I'm
Yeah,
like, for
definitely.
some reason, that just got under my skin. It's like, it really was this culmination of like disappointment over that whole season. And then the twist at the end, which you can see coming from a mile away. It's like, well, obviously, the show had Buku viewers, so it's
Right.
gonna continue.
Of course.
So it's, yeah, and it's like, oh, well, you know what, Bill? I think Joyce and Jim have to get together because sooner or later, Will Byers is gonna die from all this exorcism possession shit he's getting subjected to,
Zombie
and
boy.
they're gonna have a baby that turns out to be a scanner, and then Darryl Roebuck is gonna come back from the grave, and it's gonna be season four. So yeah.
Dude, if Michael Ironside walked on that show, he'd be slapping the shit out of people. You son of a bitch. You crying? Get out of here! Oh my God.
Jim Hopper becomes Michael Ironside at one point, actually. Yeah.
Dude, that's what I want to see. I mean, yeah, I know that whole ending, and it's like, oh, don't tell me. Because, like, this wouldn't happen, I remember those stupid dances. It's like, there's wallflowers, and you will not be picked, and you will not want to go out there, even though in your mind you're the greatest dancer in the world. And, you know what I mean? And it's like they all end up dancing with somebody and feeling good about themselves. And it's like, and it's with all they've been through, their confidence level is still limited. It's like, dude, Yeah, what happened? I'm not feeling good about the dance. I'm scared. Dude, you helped slay a fucking monster from another dimension. Yeah, but I'm scared. Like, shut the fuck up!
Well,
Get out there!
you know what it was, Bill? The thing that annoyed me, okay, and obviously we'll have to issue a spoiler alert for the show,
Forget
but I'm
it! It's
guessing
like, we're done with that. Forget it.
you know, I think everybody who wanted to watch this, you know, both seasons of this show have already watched it, and we're late to the party, so
No, we're not.
you know.
We were so oversaturated, we decided to wait.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing in this case. But you know, the thing with Dustin, you know, getting all dressed up in his tuxedo and everything, I was like, you know what? If you really watch Pretty in Pink and saw Ducky
Yes, Ducky, totally.
go to the prom by himself and he lands Christy Swanson in the end, you should have just been yourself and you would have gotten someone to dance with you. I thought it made no sense that his character got all like he was all suave all of a sudden and acting all like fucking James Bond. I was like, it made no sense.
Yeah, with Lost Boys hair.
Yeah, and that was, oh my God, yeah. I'd be looking the other way too, but you know. But I guess it's like him like trying to, I guess he was building up his confidence from being with Steve and Steve being such a paragon of cool kind of, but
I don't know.
it just didn't make sense to me. And then it's like, okay, yeah. Oh, we're gonna tilt the camera upside down because it's a little joke. You get it? And all right,
Yep.
all aboard for 2019. But it's gonna be a big year for Stranger Things, and you know, if the people at Warner's are smart, they will release the new It film close to whenever the new Stranger Things is coming out.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
you know, Bill, something an aside I wanted to bring up. I Best Buy, you know, despite the fact that it may be on the way out for various reasons.
Thanks to Amazon, everything's on the way out.
Well, something I like about them, and I'm sometimes a dork for this stuff, is they'll get in like exclusive Steelbook editions of
Yeah.
Blu-rays, and you know, I have a couple of those, and they're neat. And they had an exclusive one for the new It movie when it came out.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I pre-ordered it. I did this in-store pickup thing, which I think is pretty cool. You can order it and pay for it online. You just have to go to the store and show your ID and they'll give it to you. So anyway, and it's a good way to get like that stuff that people tend to really snatch up pretty fast. So I go to the Best Buy one day after work to pick it up. And you know, the girl gives it to me, and she was like, oh, I love that movie, and when I saw it starred Mike from Stranger Things, and she made the little like heart gesture with her two hands kind of thing.
Oh, is that when you got arrested for assault?
But you know, Bill, that right there, maybe to summarize, was kind of so telling about so much. Because it's like, oh, it wasn't oh yeah, I'm a big fan of the book, you know,
Of
and
course.
I liked it, or I liked the miniseries, and that got me into the
Right.
story, and I liked the new film version of it. It was the fact that you had Mike from Stranger Things in the movie, and the fact that there are definitely parallels, even though Stephen King wrote that novel back in he it was published back in 86.
Right.
But that structure, that characterization is, you know, definitely similar and definitely something that Stranger Things, like, you know, I was mentioning the Goonies early on, definitely pulls from for its inspiration.
It's all retreaded prop plot lines and everything else too, man. It's just it's, we've seen it and heard it all before. Why do people like it? That's what I want to know. I
And I
really
think
want to
that.
fucking know.
Yeah, and I think the thing with you, Bill, is you liked it because you felt that that was a, you know, that was telling a story in a original way. You know, that was its own thing, kind of.
Yeah, but I was putting it in perspective too. I know when the book was written, and it's like, okay, for that time, okay, fine, you know. And I loved how we got to see a little bit of, you know, the characters and how they were coping, and they were funny, and the dialogue was great, and all this cool stuff. Where sometimes, you know, it wasn't where some with Stranger Things, sometimes it's really dragged out, just like on The Walking Dead. They're soap operas. They're milking this crap. So what?
Well,
Watch
yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead and your world will be rocked.
Well, you know what, Bill? You were talking about the sort of the curse of too much time, like the hour show versus the half hour show.
Absolutely.
And honestly, there are maybe like two shows that I can name, or maybe three or four, but like I'm rewatching Breaking Bad right now, and that's a show where I'm like I start watching an episode and it's like, oh wait, it's over with already? It's like I just want it to keep going, kind of, because it's so the writing is so good, the characters are so good, the situations are for the most part really unpredictable. And I felt the same way watching The Wire once I really got into it. It was the same sort of thing. It's like, oh my God, I could, I that's those are two shows where I could really sit on the couch for like a whole day and just keep watching them, like, just because I'm so engaged. And with Stranger Things and a lot of other shows, I just find that, well, I'll watch one episode and, maybe wait a day or so to watch another one. It all depends on how much I'm hooked by something. And the first season of Stranger Things, I mean, I could have watched a couple episodes in succession with my girlfriend, and we actually went up, I think we went about 2 weeks between episodes at one point. I was actually kind of jonesing to watch it some more. So I mean, that I think that says something about the first season, but with the second season, it was kind of like just let's I wasn't like putting up a fight about us not watching it like more than once a week or something like that, because I was like, ah, just it's really not doing it for me. It's not hooking me.
No, you brought up a great point. I mean, watching Breaking Bad, I mean, that hour would be like, it's over already? And with like even episodes of The Walking Dead and Stranger Things, it's like, my gosh, that was the longest hour on record. And this is why I like Shameless, because you have multiple characters, multifaceted, complex characters, and that show has the best editing I've ever seen. These phenomenal transitions between characters, the depth, the uniqueness. You don't really know what's going to happen from minute to minute, and it just keeps you engaged, and you blink and it's over. And it's like, okay, we're watching Stranger Things. Okay, I like the theme, even though it's an X-Files ripoff. And it's like, okay, and here we go. And up, same old shit. Nothing new. It's just they're milking it, milking it, milking it. And I want the writing to improve. I want them to give me something that's awesome, because I am sick of all of this fucking commercial bullshit. That seeing the same shit again and again and again. And I don't care what producers say, well, audiences love it. No, real audiences want something new. And I really want to know from horror fans why. Contact me, tell me, why do you like Stranger Things when you've seen it all before? Pisses me off.
Yeah, that's apparent. Yeah.
I'm not a parent. They're not allowing me to have a child. Oh, I did have a child. I think her name's number 12.
You are number 12. Where are you? Where am I? In Hawkins, Indiana. You never leave this small town, and if you do, the Demogorgon comes up and sucks you up and spits you back into the town or
Yeah, well,
something.
screw that. Take me to Sunnydale with Buffy and those characters, that amazing world that Joss Whedon created, that always kept you on your toes, that was always different. And even when he did the heinous thing of bringing a character back from the dead, he did it in a different fashion, a unique fashion, and he made it quite interesting. Unlike this droll crap that anyone could have done with Stranger Things, because it's all been done. And like, even when Dan O'Bannon said, "I stole from everybody," when he created Alien, yeah, he might have. However, he was a great craftsman when it came to story, and he came up with some really wonderful elements, wonderful things that worked, and he wanted it to be different. He wanted what he was doing to stand out in a way that you hadn't seen it before, because he wanted something new. And that's what I
Well,
want the Duffer brothers to do. I want them to wake the fuck up and do something new.
Bill, it's cool that you bring up Dan O'Bannon in the end here, because a lot of people, including yourself, consider the original Alien to be some people consider it a model of perfection, not unlike the creature at the center of it. You know, because, well, what was Dan O'Bannon doing? And I mean, probably at the time he said that, he probably felt that way, and he was probably pretty self-deprecating about, you know, his, as most writers are, about what they produce.
Yeah, well, Jodorowsky's Dune fell through, and he'd been living on a couch in Paris or some shit like that, waiting for this production to come off. So he was, like a lot of people, devastated that, you know, the whole film went through.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean with Alien, Bill, you know, it's valid that Dan O'Bannon just, like, he wrote the script and Ridley Scott essentially turned it into an upscaled version of a 50s B movie, like Martian Invasion. Yeah.
Yeah, that should have been a B movie. But again, it was something different, and we had those compelling characters and those surprises, and that's a slow movie.
Yeah.
Like, even Ridley Scott says it took, nothing happens for 40 minutes.
It builds so well, though. But, yeah,
exactly, because that's great writing. There isn't great writing in Stranger Things. There isn't.
Okay, Bill. I think I've got to the crux of it here. Is that okay? Nothing happens for the first 40 minutes in Alien, quote unquote, nothing. But the way it builds, it keeps you on that hook, so that when shit does start happening, you're like, the hook is like deep inside, and that hook's not coming out.
It's in my belly.
Yeah, until the movies, that hook is in your back. It comes out your stomach, and it goes through your mouth and out the back of your head, and you know. Anyway.
wow, but, Johnny, keep your sexual fantasies to yourself, hook boy.
Yeah, I was gonna say I need to masturbate to D. Snyder's Strangeland after that. So again, the pastiche. But
oh my
point
God.
Is,
D. Snyder kills, man. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but I guess my point is, like, with Stranger Things, where from the first minute of the show, from the first beat of the opening credits theme, you're being given a throwback, basically. You're pretty much, everybody's in on the joke that, okay, everything here is going to be pulled from something else, and sometimes very blatantly, whereas Alien was a bit more unassuming and a bit more minimalist, and it wasn't as obvious. And I mean, H.R. Giger also plays into that as well with his design of stuff, which was just mind-blowing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right, man, but still, I want better writing, man. I want a season 3 that I didn't see coming, because right now, I have a whole bunch of predictions written down for it, and it's just like, I doubt I'll be surprised by anything.
Well, I mean, it remains to be seen, Bill, but it also makes me it almost makes me wonder, like, I think this about, like, Marvel and the DC movies that come out, because, frankly, part of me is getting tired of the whole Marvel machine, because I feel like the seams of the formula, I think, have been showing for about the last half dozen movies, at least for me.
Ignoring the characters in the comic books. Thor is not funny. Thor is a god. He's not spitting out one-liners, you douchebags. Fucking A. Oh, my God.
But you know, I guess my point is, like, with Stranger Things, it'll be interesting to see, well, depending on the quality, like you said, of the writing, how much the fans will stick it out, or if the writing is less good than what you felt the first two seasons are, if they'll, like, react adversely to it and start to say, yeah, it wasn't as good, and I'm not as excited for season 4, because you know there'll be a season 4. But yeah, it'll just be interesting to see how that goes and what the reaction is and what results from that. I mean, I'm with you hoping it's great, but if they've been leaning this much on familiarity and callbacks to other things, mm-hmm. I don't know if there's really any indication that that's going to stop, because that's where the cash, that's the cash, that's the merchandising, that's what's sending the girls to Hot Topic and the boys. So,
jeez, Hot Topic. Oh man, now I'm really sick. Is it scream out time, Johnny?
I think we just got to get on with it, Bill. We could be here all night. Make your Demogorgon face, Bill, and do some scream outs.
Oh my God! And I love D&D, by the way. Anyway, Our first Scream Out 2, A Wonderful Soul, you could find on Twitter, Outside Darkness. Outside Darkness into heavy metal, horror, sci-fi, certified paranormal investigator. There you go. Outside Darkness has friends, not followers. And they're out of Florida. And also go to their website, outsidedarkness.com. The wonderful Chantel Handley. She's a full-time freelance pastel artist with an eternal passion for horror and music. Her work is amazing. You could check out her work at chantelhandley.etsy.com. She's out of Western Australia. And also check out her website, chantellaurahandley.com. The awesome, and I have to get him on the show. I have to. Johnny, you got to get him on the show. Somebody's got to get him on the show. The real Tom Holland. Writer-director of Child's Play, great story. Fright Night, great story. And Thinner.
Yeah.
Writer of Psycho 2, which he made a great story out of. Class of 1984, which is becoming real.
I love that movie.
Exactly. Beast Within and Cloak and Dagger, because real Tom Holland knows how to be real as a writer and a director. Out of L.A., go to thterrortime.com to learn more. The phenomenal Amanda Bergloff. She's an author of speculative fiction, surrealist artist, collector of books, toys, and comics, editor-in-chief of Enchanted E-Zine, and she's also a Junior Mints enthusiast. Check out her work on Amazon. The fantastic 12-Night Horror, and that's for actually 12 Nights of Horror. And if you love horror, horror movies, and Halloween, we'll have a Scream. There we go, Johnny. Also check out their 12 Days of Movies. Look for them on Instagram. Why? Because they're lurking in the dark. And also go to 12nightsofhorror.com. Breaking Indie Reviews from Mary Wood. So go to Breaking Eye Reviews. Indie music reviews, real music. She loves 70s and all this fun stuff, horror, whatnot. She's out of Charlottesville, so check her out. Great reviews. She's fantastic. The wonderful Phoenix Fiery 7. She's an LA-based talent acquisition writer, editor, script to screen. We got to get her on a show for talk about writing. She's part of the Free Will Writers Asylum, and it's definitely an asylum sister, along with the great Real Jilly G, of course. Nocturnal Horror. Follow her on Instagram at Phoenix Fiery. She's out of Hollywood, LA. Beautiful place to be. And also check out her site, phoenixfiery.wordpress.com. The Awesome Souls, who sell their soul at Nonprofit Horror. It's all about free horror promotion. Just tag us in your post and we'll retweet it. Anything horror related goes. And the one thing I can say, it's great if they retweet your horror stuff, but definitely retweet others. Yeah. I mean, come on, don't be a douchebag. Had enough of that tonight.
Share the love.
Share the horror love. Share the bloody love. Scream Magazine. Where are they? Mm-hmm. Scream Horror Mag, the world's number one horror magazine. 100 pages in full color glossy print and digital. And you can subscribe via their website, which is screamhorrormag.com. Don't miss it. Every issue is bursting at the seams with awesomeness. That Horrible Woman, what's that? THW_podcast, the new vibe of horror and modern dark fiction podcast. And she's also a contributor to Scream Radio from the lovely and vivacious Tracy_TR. Contact and submissions, go to info@thathorriblewoman.com and go to thathorriblewoman.com, the website. And finally tonight, Miss J. Briggs, otherwise known to fans on Twitter as Fucked Chick. Without the K, it's almost like Fucked Chic. She's wonderful soul, great family and friends, lover, sister as well. She's into Marilyn Monroe, horror, The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, animals, Inked Girls, and music, people, laughter, fun, gardening, and baking. And she's just cool. Follow her, please. She's wonderful. And that's all I got, man.
Awesome, Bill.
So where can people find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. You can also find my movie reviews at loudgreenbird.com. What about you, Billy?
Me at CrashPalaceProductions.com and on Netflix.
Well, you might be. This show might be going to Netflix.
Netflix,
we'll talk.
I'm sure they're going to call me up right away. No, they'll call you up and go, get rid of that lunatic Billy guy.
We're gonna do a remake of Orange Is the New Black, actually.
Yeah. Oh my god. Wow. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace, and also on Instagram as Billy Crash. But please visit the website CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show, as well as on iTunes, of course. And we love comments. I want to know why you love this show, people. And
not this podcast we just recorded.
And that's pretty much it. And you can check out writing from the wonderful Creatively Angel, Johnny Numb, Randy Broska, Paul J. Williams. We have a show with him coming up. I think you can tell that I'm posting this one like right away. And a whole bunch of wonderful shows to come. So I hope you enjoy it. And I'm more stable with those. This is one show that really ticks me off.
Yeah, I'll be interested to hear the reactions to this one.
Same here. Yeah, you might want to do a new show with somebody else. Hi, I'm Johnny Numb with Dave K.
I think Dave, you know what, Bill? I think the girls outside of Hot Topic are going to be burning us in effigy after this show, actually.
And we will have Dave K on soon, so.
Yes, that's in the works, and I'm looking forward to that, too.
Awesome. So, yeah. All right, man, on that note, Johnny.
Don't let the upside down hit you on the way out, Bill.
Well, this show's 1 hour, 20 minutes long, which is about an hour for freaking Stranger Things. So we met it. It's good.
Okay.
Okay, man. Have a good one, bud.
You too, Bill. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.